going on, everybody? And welcome to episode 57 of Mental Dive, where we talk anything and everything, sports psychology and mental performance. I'm your host, Taylor Staden. I am really excited to release this bonus episode for you today amidst the big announcement for season 2 of Mental Dive. And so what makes me really excited about the upcoming season of Mental Dive is that there's going to be a theme to it. And that theme is the psychology of coaching. So we're going to be going into a deep dive over the course of a 5-episode season, with episodes being released on a weekly basis starting on September 15th, featuring some of the world's leading experts in the psychology of coaching, where we will be discussing practical applied tools to help all you coaches out there learn how to get more out of your players and your coaching habits, as well as yourself. So I'm not going to spoil any topics for you, but this season is going to be really, really good for any of you coaches out there, or anybody who's looking to learn more about coaching, or you're just maybe curious, or maybe you just like listening to my podcast. That's a good reason to listen to it too. But yeah, so stay tuned for more details. I will be releasing them soon. The best way to get updates is to check out my Instagram, at Taylor Staden. That's at TaylorStaden, or you can sign up for my emailing list by clicking the link in the description of this episode. But as I'm sure you saw in the title of this podcast, today is a bonus episode. I am giving you an interview to keep you kind of tied over ahead of the upcoming Psychology of Coaching season. And this episode is with current Kingston Frontenacs general manager and goalie coach Corey Cooper. A former professional hockey player, Coach Cooper actually recently came into the role of general manager with the Kingston Frontenacs ahead of the upcoming 2021-22 season. And throughout the course of the podcast, we actually get into some really interesting topics. A few of them being, we talk about this term of competitive consistency and how it helped one of the newest Seattle Kraken, Chris Drieger, to becoming the goalie he is today. We also get into some ideas about how calm is contagious and how that helps Carey Price be the goaltender he is, as well as some of his thoughts on the importance of the mental side of the game for goalies. So without spoiling any more, let's get into the interview. So Corey, I really appreciate you taking the time to come to the podcast today. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. It's been a whirlwind, I would say a few weeks just post-draft, and things are starting to calm down a little bit. Now I'm going to try to enjoy hopefully a little bit of summer.
Yeah, right on. So I know we chatted a little bit, before we started here about the draft. It's just crazy how much of a guessing game maybe it really is, just because you haven't been able to see a lot of players play their U16 year.
Yeah, I would say for every team, it was the most interesting year you'll possibly ever have to go through. So for my role being in management, it was certainly a new experience. But with the way it played out, I mean, again, we talked about it, but there'd be players that you may have had ranked really high that didn't actually go till late in the draft, only because, you know, a lot of teams, maybe it was viewings, to that extent. So because you didn't get to see a lot of players or the progression line with those guys, I think guys' lists were all over the place. So teams are probably really happy with the players they got at where they got them. But reality is no one will really know until the season kind of gets rolling.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you mentioned that you're now in management. You started the new role as the AGM this past season, correct?
Actually took it on in September last year, which, you know, obviously in a normal year, the season would have begun at that point in time. Yeah. So a little bit of a late start. So this is kind of, even right now, a little bit of uncharted waters for me, in the sense that this is the time of year where you start to, you know, put your roster together, start to get contracts completed, start to make some moves as far as transfers go. So things that are still new to me.
I'm sure a learning experience and growth experience at the same time.
Probably the number one reason why I decided to take this job and leave the one I was in previously is to continue to grow and continue to learn. I think that's important for any coach, or aspiring manager at that point in time. If you're going to learn more roles in the game and to kind of evolve, right, and diversify yourself, I think it's the right move, and that's why I did it.
Yeah, for sure. So Corey, one way I like to always start the podcast is I'd love to learn a little bit about your story and your why. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got where you are today and today, what makes you passionate about what you do?
Great questions. To be honest with you, so I grew up in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. And obviously, everywhere in Canada, hockey's kind of the thing. But I grew up around a hockey school there called Alan Anders Hockey Growth Programs. And I was a rink rat. I've always been a rink rat. I spent, you know, full days there, even as a kid. So 9, 10 years old, loved to be at the rink. Would work at the hockey school, would be, obviously involved in it, but then also work out in the sense that I would be a junior instructor, a demonstrator, and I would spend the day there. And that's kind of where my passion began, and just being around people all the time and people with, similar likes as I had. So I just have always been kind of immersed in the game. And then that kind of, from a goaltending standpoint, was easy to be drawn into the unique position, the goalie's equipment, like any guy, right? Any guy who's aspiring to be a goalie, and you got your dad downstairs trying to shoot the orange hard balls at you because he don't really want you to become a goalie. You know, they're a little bit against it. They want you to be a player because they know goaltending is like a little challenging, a little more costly. They don't know enough about it. So, yeah. But that just drew me to the position even more. And like I said, I wanted to be at the rink all the time. I spent a lot of time just hanging out with players that I kind of idolized or looked up to, and kind of just followed my path from there and leaving Prince Edward Island. Because back then, I mean, I'm 44. So back then there wasn't as much opportunity. There was no Quebec League in the Maritimes at that point in time. Okay. So for my path, I've obviously done well in a AAA goalie in Charlottetown. So my path was really like, what's the next move? So it ended up being coming to Ontario and playing in Smiths Falls in Junior A. So that was through my major Bantam year, leaving Charlottetown. It was an opportunity to see if I could take that jump and kind of pursue a hockey career. And that led me to actually Pembroke to start was the recruiting process through Alan Anders Hockey Growth Programs, and was identified there. I went to Pembroke for, I think, maybe 3 days, but they had goalies already committed. Mm-hmm. So, but I showed well in camp. So while I was there, and they thought there might be interest in me throughout the league, were able to move me to Smiths Falls. And as a 16-year-old, I guess it was at that point in time, I had a really good year in Smiths Falls in Junior A. And as an Islander, you got to declare which league you wanted to play in. So the Quebec League, the Ontario, and the Western League, because there was no team in Atlantic Canada at that point in time. So you make your choice, right? So you get the form, and then you're trying to weigh the options. So for me, it was I had some Quebec League teams obviously interested, being, the proximity-wise to PEI, it made sense. But playing in Ontario the year before in Smiths Falls and having a good season and winning some league awards, I thought Ontario was probably the best fit just for that, because I was more recognizable to people in the area. Right. And that kind of led me to Belleville and being drafted there in the third round of Belleville that year. And out of Smiths Falls, and that kind of started off my junior career at that point in time. And then really just progressed through my junior career to the minors. I would say a pretty successful junior career working through the minors, spending a lot of years through there, kind of seeing where that would take me. Didn't really get to obviously the levels I wanted to, for whatever reasons. And then again, being the hockey junkie that I am and so passionate about the sport and spending so much time invested in it, that coaching was really the next thing, right? So as soon as I decided I wasn't going to play anymore, it really led me into coaching. And oddly enough, it was the Kingston Frontenacs were my first OHL goalie coaching job, which happened pretty quickly from Larry Mavity. And Mav was, one of my guys. He always looked after me. And he was my coach in Belleville, and then brought me into Kingston as the goalie coach. And that kind of started my coaching career. And as far as passion goes, I mean, like I said, I've always just been so invested in the game and love the game that you're not playing, you're coaching. And this is what I do. It's who I am. It's kind of embedded inside me at this point in time. So that started my coaching career, and it's just kind of gone through that path to this point.
Yeah, I love that. And I find it super interesting that you actually had the choice of which major junior league you wanted to play in. Because that, when you mentioned you're from Maritimes, that's the first thing that came to my head was, well, how do you end up in the OHL? But then, so that's actually really, really interesting. And, you talk about how your passion led you to wanting to stay within the sport. And, maybe those tendencies as a young rink rat have maybe creeped into your adult years. And so now we touched on this a bit earlier with your job as a GM, but now with you being both the goalie coach and assistant GM of Kingston, could you tell us a little bit about these roles and maybe what this dynamic has been like for you so far?
I mean, yeah, it's unique in the sense that there's not a lot of, in the OHL, there certainly is a lot of double roles, but it's unique in the sense that the goalie coach is also the assistant general manager. I'd say that one's maybe a little more uncommon. So for me, the goalie coach I've been doing for a long time, spent a lot of time being a goalie coach post playing, from 27, 28, but as far as the management side of it, that is new to me. And like I said, it's a great learning experience, but for me, that really, my role could go in multiple different ways, right? From a team services guy, you really got to wear multiple hats, and it's really about the day-to-day operation. So it could be scouting, it could be player transfers, it could be, you know, taking care of billets, it could have to do with scheduling, making sure the buses are on time. There's so many different avenues you can go as an assistant general manager, but it really comes down to assisting in day-to-day operations and kind of learning the league and learning the rules and regulations within it. And you know, it's a lot of paperwork on a daily basis, so it's not as glamorous as you may think at this point in time. So I do have to sit at the desk and fill out a lot of documents and make sure everybody's, you know, stuff is up to date. But I'm enjoying it. I'm certainly more excited about having players in the building and being part of that and being able to do the coaching alongside of it. It's been a lot of, you know, a year of pushing paper, so I'm ultimately excited for the coaching side of it. But yeah, you wear multiple hats in junior, and you got to be able to be adaptable. So, you know, you turn that, you have the manager's hat on for a while, and then it's right down to the dressing room, and then, you know, you put your coach's hat on. And being able to manage that and make sure that you're organized on a daily basis is kind of the importance, you know, and you're able to separate too. So for me, it's just a matter of making sure, yeah, my files are in order. And, you know, if I leave the manager's job to go down and coach, that, you know, I know where I left off and what needs to be done the next day. And, you know, the same thing from coaching. You want to make sure your documentation is always there. And that's important to me. I make sure that on a daily basis, I always review what I did on the ice that day, how the goalies were, right? So I've got a log, and I keep a backlog of everything. So we know the areas that we focused on. We know the areas we need to continue improving upon and creating those action plans to help each goalie, for that matter, be their best individual. I don't want it to be too cookie cutter in that sense. I want every guy to kind of have their own time, their own areas of focus to improve upon. So I make sure that those things are outlined and you can stay the course, because it is easy when you are wearing multiple hats to kind of forget as to what you were doing over here or over there. So it's important to really document and make sure that's clear.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what you're saying reminds me a lot of what Brian Burke was saying in his book, where when he took the assistant general manager's job and with the Canucks, I really was never aware of all the paperwork and maybe the different modalities that go along with being an assistant GM, like renewing like leases with the buildings and all these different things. But one thing Burke also did was he keeps a journal and a log of all the conversations he has. And I really like that you mentioned that in terms of how you actively self-reflect. Again, with helping kind of clarify and keep you on track and organized with your different roles, but also in terms of, you know, what are the action plans, right? What are some things I noticed about the goalies today? Is this something that you maybe encourage the goalies to do as well as part of their development, is self-reflect?
It's actually one of the starting points, to be honest with you. So when I first came to Kingston, one of the first things I did with the goalies were here is I create that action plan or give them the action plan as a blank sheet. And I want them to tell me, what are your pillars? What, you know, what makes you successful? Where's your foundation? What's it built on? Or what are the areas that you know you can bring to the table for us each and every day, right? Mm-hmm. So I want them to give me that information, right? And then I want them to turn and say, okay, what are your areas of development? What are the areas that we need to focus on for you to be the best version of yourself, right? So I'm looking for that from them, because ultimately we really have to create a relationship and see kind of what, you know, how they see themselves and where we can go with it. And I liken myself to being with these guys, as I introduced, is that I'm kind of like the library. I'm there for you to use, right? I'm a resource, right? And I can help you in all these areas that you think you need to improve upon, right? You know, but you got to be open-minded to you know, give them back the same way, right? And being invested in your own development. And that action plan, then we are able to tweak it. We tweak it based on over time watching them play, or, you know, maybe that's not an area that really is a pillar of your game. I think this is a better option. And it's really open lines of communication. And the development side of it, we're making good progression on, you know, point A that you may have put down. So let's move on to something else. We'll take that off the list for now. We're going to put something else on there. So really, it's kind of a fluid document. But creating an action plan is, I think, is really important in making sure they, you know, I want to know how they see themselves, right, and how I can help them. Mm-hmm. But I also want them to be open-minded to some of the changes and how their game can evolve. Because I've, you know, had the fortune to work with a lot of great coaches as well, mm-hmm. that helped me along the way as a goalie, but also as a coach, right? And I want them to you know, be able to experience the same thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd imagine it would do wonders for not only their confidence and self-awareness, but also their consistency, right? Actively self-reflecting and thinking about, okay, what went well and what could have been better and how can I make this happen more often? That's something that I do with a lot of my athletes, is just having self-reflect on those three things. And like I mentioned, it really just helps them understand where they're at that moment in time and what's important. You know, like you said, kind of what are the pillars that you got to focus on right now?
Yeah. And it's hard. It's difficult for a lot of guys to do, right? It really is, to look back and be like, you know what? I wasn't my best today. Or, you know, over-evaluate, right? Self-evaluation is often very difficult for these guys. So, I would say every game, I always would give a personal grade to how I think the goalie performed. Right. And then kind of get their feeling as to how they thought they played. Now, I may not go into it with them that particular time if we're way off, let's say. Yeah. I don't need to create the argument, but I also want to be honest. So depending on, you know, how I sense, you know, where his mental or emotional mind is at that point in time, you know, may determine whether we bring it up or discuss it or not. But self-evaluation is often very difficult for young athletes, right? And that's something I've learned, even being in the American Hockey League, that guys often see themselves as playing better than they actually did from the coach's point of view. When you're able to, you know, have video and you can't hide and you're able to rewind it and pause it and all that kind of stuff, which makes it easier. So it's a big part of it. And I think just the ability to be honest in those areas and have that relationship and trust with your coach, right? That I think you start to, as you mentioned, become more of a consistent player.
And since we've kind of started to get into the mental side of goaltending, I'd love to learn more about your perspectives on it. So really at the root of things, I feel like for whatever reason, I find that goalies, from my experiences, are a lot more open to mental training than maybe forwards or defensemen. I don't know why, but that's just what I've noticed. And I think it's just maybe because there's so much talk around how important being strong between the ears is as a goaltender. And I'd love to learn a little bit more about what your perspectives are and the importance of the mental side of the game for goalies.
I'll back it up and say it's, you probably get that from the goalie side of it only because everybody's talked about how the game is 90% mental.
Yeah.
Right. So you try to put a value on that. Is really how much is it mental, right? If you ask each individual, you know, is it physical skill, right? Is it, your ability to stay mentally sharp? Is it your emotional control? There's so many different areas you can go with that from a goalie standpoint. So I would say goalies do spend more time in it, right? And probably because there's little less time to reset because you're invested in the game for the full 60 minutes being on the ice, where a player, if you have a bad shift, you can get off the ice, the coach gives you a tap, you take a drink of water at that point in time, right? You can a little decompress maybe and regroup. Where a goalie, you're on your own, right? You're on your own out there. There's nobody in your ear at that point in time. You allow a bad goal, what's your reset mechanism, right? How are you getting through that moment? So I would say goalies spend more time in that area only because they have to stay focused on the task at hand for a 60-minute stretch or 20 minutes at a time, however you want to break up the increments, without anybody really being able to be in your ear, right? Or help you, get through those types of things. So goalies certainly do. It plays a huge role. I don't know. I would say it's different for everybody as to how they go about it, each goalie. And some guys will spend more time. And you can see within their routines and patterns, whether it be the start of a game, before the puck is dropped, whether it's between whistles, as to the guys who are really have to spend more time dialed in, But there's also guys who are, you know, between whistles where they're able to kind of just wander in the crowd because that's their reset mechanism, right? Where they're able to let it go, right? And just take that moment break. So I think it's important, in my opinion, to be able to figure out what works best for you, for the individual, right? And make sure you're staying within that, that framework at the end of the day. And, you know, Joey DeCord's a great example because he's such a unique personality and he's fun and he's exciting, right? Mm. He's a guy who's able to kind of let his mind go a little bit and then boom, bring it right back to the attention, right? So him being able to relax in that between the whistles or whatever may be happening really allows him to take a breath, right? Mm. But then he's able to boom, put it right back into play.
Yeah.
You know, but there's guys who need to stay dialed in all the time. Me as a goalie, I could never let my mind wander. I would have to be dialed in all the time. And it's probably harder because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Right. It's exhausting. It's hard if you don't, but that's just how I was. Right. Mm. So, you know what, in hindsight, I wish there was more people around at that point in time, you know, as I was coming through that would have focused on this side of the game, because it probably would have made me a more consistent, better goalie. Mm. At the end of the day, had I been able to take a deep breath and be able to relax and, you know, have a drink of water, look at the crowd, go talk to the backup goalie. You know, if I was at the bench, but I wouldn't do any of those things. Right. Yeah. So I had to be on all the time. Right. And that's just how I played, right. To be dialed in because I wasn't maybe the most naturally skilled. But because I was so determined just to make a save any way I could, it kind of got me through. Right. So it is interesting. I wish this topic was maybe discussed more back then. I think goalies do a much better job of managing it now than I would have per se, or my era would have. And it's probably why you see better goalies and more consistent goalies from the mental side of it anyway, in today's game. So listen, so I do this. So I read these daily, right? So this is the Daily Stoic.
Okay.
Right. And right. It's nothing crazy. It just gives me a small blurb data to kind of bring my mind back to a small, into a, you know, a specific area. And when I read the other day, it's a Navy SEAL say, is calm is contagious, right?
Okay.
And Carey Price is really like the epitome of calm when he's playing, mm-hmm. right? So things be able to make a big save, have a little wink, a little smirk on his face, right? I think because he is so calm, it's contagious through his whole group, right? And it helps everybody kind of relax within that, right? And, you know, that's kind of how he's always played. Right? If you go back to him playing in the Olympics, for example, he was unbelievable, right? But he's just calm and goes about his business and relaxed, and he's able to just kind of breathe through it and stay in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't really seem to get too wavered over the course of his season. I get it. There's times with everybody, right? But he's that's kind of his persona. And I think it's contagious. I think it's contagious for the group. Certainly as a coach, it's something that I'm conscious of, because it's not uncommon as a coach, you want to feel needed, right? As a goalie coach, especially, you want to feel like you're making a difference in the goalie's, the goalie's results, right?
Yeah.
But reality is you can overcoach and you can make him more tense and uptight and nervous for a scenario, right? By overcoaching and giving too much information, right? Mm-hmm. And because you're aware, I mean, I do a pre-scout and I'm on everything, right? I'm like, this guy does this. He's got this tendency. This guy does this in the shootout and the power play. The puck's going to go through this guy. And you got to watch out for the moving screen. And this guy looks to tip back, you know, backdoor play. But if you give a goalie all that information, right now his mind is boggled. He's all over the place because he's starting to think of everything I've told him, right? And all the scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. So I've really been made a conscious effort over the last few seasons. And it's kind of evolved as a coach, again, with more maturity, to make sure that I don't overcoach, right? Yeah. You stay calm, right? Help the goalie relax, allow them to have fun, right? Allow them to do their thing. There's certain key aspects we will always go over, okay? Mm-hmm. And they want information. You got to figure out who wants more and who wants less. But at the end of the day, I want them to have fun and go out and play and subconscious thought and not have to overthink it, right? But it's easy for a coach because you really want to be, you want to be part of it, right? So it's the easiest thing to do is give them way too much information and feel like you're needed. But the goalie ultimately needs to be his own best coach. That's what it has to come down to, right? So again, you got to go back to being the resource, right? A little bit of the library and figure out, you know, who needs what and let them come to you a little bit, right? And that's part of it. It's just overcoaching is easy to do. So you got to be careful on that element. But again, to me, it goes back to being calm, right? You need to be calm. And I'm passionate about it. I love goaltending, right? And I'm so easy to get excited about it and excited about the game. But when you're in those moments before the game, even as a coach, not just the goalie, you have to make sure that you're calm, you're breathing, because you don't need to get any more anxiety into the goalie than he may already have.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like, especially when you're working with maybe professional goaltenders, like they oftentimes they know what to do, right? Like they don't need to have all this information and just being overloaded. Really, like you mentioned, it reminds me a lot of what one of my former guests, Brian Miles, said, where he said, you want to maybe listen more and talk less, right? Just listen, hear them out, which can be really, really tough, whether it's as a goalie coach or a mental performance coach, you name it. Because like you mentioned, we oftentimes have answers and we notice certain things and we're so eager to help. But sometimes it's actually, like you mentioned, a lot better just to take a step back and kind of chime in when needed, right? Let them kind of make mistakes and figure it out on their own.
Yeah. So you want to see it through their lens. So I guess after every game, right, where we're going to set up a video review and I'm going to watch the clips and pick out the ones that I want to show whichever goalie it is, right? I don't want it to be in a situation or a setting where we sit in the office or sitting wherever it may be, and I'm doing all the talking and be like, I think he could have did this here and this here. And, you know, I would say you want that feedback from them. I want to see it through their lens. Okay. What did you see in this particular clip? So as a coach, it's important you ask those proper questions, right? You can't just be in there hammering away at their play, right? So you kind of find out, you know, what they saw, why they did what they did, right? And then you might be able to get a clearer picture on you know, their style or their thoughts on it, right? Mm-hmm. So it comes back to having that relationship. And that will be a moment where it's, yeah, talk less, right? And listen more, certainly.
Yeah.
Right? You have to get their perspective on it as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And so kind of shifting gears here a bit, you know, some goaltenders tend to take a lot longer to develop before getting a legit shot at the NHL level, with some taking some really long winding roads like Chris Driedger, who you've coached in the past. In saying this, like, what role do you think the mental game plays in sticking to this grind?
It's massive, to be honest. And Chris is so Driedger is like a little brother to me. Okay. So Driedger's over the last couple of years, not recently, but you know, post his time with the Senators organization, would come here to my place in Kingston, stay in the basement and do a week of camp, right? Where we just do some skating and private sessions. I talk to him regularly. He's awesome, right? He's, like I said, he's like a little brother to me. He's important. I love the success that he's having. Okay. Reality is, when he was with Ottawa, he was still an immature, not only goalie, but he really hadn't matured as a person at that point in time. And when you're younger, you know, you think you get all the time in the world, right? So I would say mentally, he probably didn't commit to his own game or his own lifestyle to the level he needed to when he was here. Maybe just due to youth. He was still kind of enjoying that, you know, we'll call it junior lifestyle, right? Where he hadn't really taken it as serious as he needed to take it yet. So the mental side of for him really probably didn't kick in until he got to Florida system and he was like, oh man, I'm running out of opportunities here, right? I'm going to really have to, you know, bear down and invest myself. And when he started to do that, I think that's when he kind of brought it to the next level. So his routines, pre-game and post-game became way more valuable. His ability to go to bed earlier, right? Mm. And get a better night's sleep, right? Wake up in the morning and make sure he started his day active and just kind of developed patterns and habits, right? So I would say his lifestyle changed more so than anything. And then mentally, he was able to you know, see the daily improvements, understand the value in all of those things, right? Yeah. So, and then, you know, being able to take that to the ice then. So now all of a sudden your practice habits go from like, you know, why am I trying? This is a dumb drill, right? This is a dumb drill. It's like, it doesn't make sense. It's not realistic. to like, now he wants to stop everything. Right. Yeah. So mentally he's like, I can get something out of every drill. Right. Where before mentally he was like, this is dumb. Why am I even doing it? Yeah. Right. So I think he was kind of able to get there. Right. And change his mindset. And because he was able to do that, I think he kind of, you know, just kept seeing improvement after improvement. Right. And then consequently started playing better, more consistently, competitive consistency at the end of the day. And his game has grown to where it is now. He's got a great personality for it only because Driggs never gets worked up, right? Like if it's not going well, it doesn't really bother him. And when it's going really well, right, the moment's not too big for him. He's just, he's an even keeled guy, just goes about his business now, never too high, never too low, kind of just sits right there in the groove all the time. Whether he's asked to be the backup or he's asked to be the starter, has a huge night, he kind of just stays right in that slot all the time. He's got a great personality for a goalie because of that, where he really nothing really phases the guy, right? At this point, because he's taken that next step, you know, in his career and his lifestyle and the importance of it. And I think that really came back to, you know, he was running out of opportunities and mentally he realized that, hey, I've got to rededicate myself here. And once he did that, and you know, people have seen now what he's capable of, and now this is who he is. Right. So, he's got a fantastic, goalie mental side of it, you know, just the way he goes about his business now. And I couldn't be happier for him to have the results that he's gotten over the past few seasons, because it's been fun to watch. And he's a guy that I speak to probably, you know, we'll say it every other week at this point, but after big games, I'll always shoot him a text or whatever. And yeah, he just goes about his business now on a daily basis, good or bad.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And it's really cool to see just like a guy like Driggs who, you know, he's kind of bouncing between the American League and the coast, has a cup of coffee in the NHL. And like you said, he maybe realized that he was running out of opportunities, so he dials it in. And then next thing you know, he's starting games in the playoffs ahead of guys like Sergei Bobrovsky.
Yeah, it was never a skill issue for a guy like Driggs, right? It had nothing to do with his physical abilities. He's got all the tools, right? Mm-hmm. And physically, you know, he's a 6'4" guy. He's got all the goalie technical aspects and skills you would need to play in the NHL. But being able to rededicate himself that, and then finding that competitive consistency from a mental side of it, and being able to develop those habits and routines is really what's got him there. It was never about, you know, his skill level, right? It's just kind of those other areas where he knew he could give more, right? And he was open about it and he gave more, and, you know, you'd add an extra zero to your paycheck, never hurt.
Yeah, no kidding. No, he'll probably do pretty well this offseason, if we're being honest. But interesting, too, because you see guys like Driggs who are predominantly backup roles, but they might then get opportunities to be a starter somewhere else. And this transition is easier said than done for some more than others. So in your opinion, what are some things that make a good starting versus backup goaltender?
Yeah, it's a tough one because you don't really know who those guys are, but it's the guys who have the ability to play to the upper echelon of their games on a nightly basis, right? And until you're kind of in that and that level, I would say it's hard to really know who's really going to be able to, you know, to be able to pull that off. Because in the NHL, I mean, you're putting in every night, you have to give everything, right? It's draining physically, mentally, and emotionally every night to be successful. It's a hard league, right? It's the hardest league. And then to be able to back that up after a really good performance on a Friday and try to do it again on a Saturday or a Sunday after your team has traveled, right, is difficult. So I think it's being able to go through those experiences and to really be able to figure out if you can handle or not is probably the only way. But it is those guys. So to me, it's those guys that have that personality where they never really kind of, you know, get too high or too low. And they, you know, they're invested, but emotionally, they don't let it affect them, right? And so I think it's those goalies. And they start to just be able to manage their bodies and manage their minds, you know, on a daily basis. So, you know, starting goalies sometimes may have a tendency to be able to, you know, take a day off and practice off so they can get away from it a little more. The backup goalies are there and they're committed to the team and are, you know, and making sure the practices are going the way they need to go, because practices are a little bit of their games, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important for them, but it's also important for their players, right? To be, you know, to be in that kind of competitive nature all the time. So it really is a good question. I don't think necessarily it's always a skill issue, an ability issue. Yeah, that'll always be part of it, because there's guys who are just elite skill. But I think it's those guys that play to the upper echelon of their abilities more often and through competitive consistency, you know, and are able to kind of control their minds mentally and emotionally a little bit better. I know in junior it's one of the harder things because you play 3 games in 3 days often.
Yeah.
Right. And that's challenging, right? Not only is that challenging physically, it's certainly challenging mentally to be able to get up for those moments all the time and stay in that, you know, in that task at hand, which is, mm-hmm. you know, the most important thing. So in junior, it probably has a little more to do with skill, in that sense, because you know, different ages, different levels, more mature. But at the NHL level, it's a fine line. It really is a fine line, right? So I think it's probably to do more with the mental and emotional control you can bring on a daily basis than it is really a skill level, because everybody, the top 60 in the world, they're all great.
Totally. And talk a lot about what separates maybe a starter from a backup. But then I feel like there's also some goalies who are just really good at that backup role. Like you look at somebody like Curtis McElhinney.
Yeah. Right,
who is on a team with, you know, Vasilevskiy. So he's not going to get that many games at the end of the day. Like he's goes weeks without playing quite often. Let's take a guy like Curtis McElhinney. What do you think makes goalies in those kind of situations successful? Ones who don't get to play all that much, but can be dialed in when needed.
Yeah. He probably practices his game. He doesn't just practice. So when he's out of practice, he's working on game scenarios and game situations and putting points in that practice that are important to him, right? He's probably working on, even in practice, his reset mechanisms if he does allow a goal, you know, and being able to focus on playing, not just practicing, right? Mm-hmm. But he's the type of guy probably, and I don't know him, but probably knows his starts are circled on the calendar and knows when he's going to be playing and be able to have a preparation or a routine or pattern or habit that lead him into that particular start. Yeah, he's ready if you know, Vasi gets hurt in a game or gets yanked, he's able to go into that scenario and you know, play his game. But he probably knows when he's starting and at that point is able to build towards those starts to be his sharpest. But I think it's, you know, good practice habits, good routines. You stay in the moment. You show up to games like you're playing, right? You don't just come in knowing you're the backup. So having those routines, I think, is probably important to him. He probably goes about his business in a really professional manner and mentally stays sharp and ready to play because he's preparing every day as if he's playing, right? Mm-hmm. But he's really building towards his starts because they probably know. Right. He probably has a good idea going into the week. He's probably got 5-6 days notice, maybe longer. When you got a guy like Vasilevskiy, when you're going to be playing. Right. So he's able to gear up to probably those scenarios. And he's been great at that role. And you're right. There's examples of guys that do that. And I think a lot of those times is A, because they're able to be at their best when they're called upon. And they're probably great team guys. Right. Yeah. They're really good team people that do more for the team, not just as playing. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. He's probably great for Vasilevskiy as well. He's probably a lending ear to him where Vasi needs somebody to, you know, to talk to and doesn't want getting back to the coaching staff, let's say. Right.
Yeah.
You're probably one of those guys, right? You're able to go vent with the other goalie, and Curtis might be more important to him than we know. Right. Being able to be that lending ear. Right. And help him keeping him at a level head. I don't know. I'm just knowing some of my experiences is that you often have those relationships with the other goalie. If it's not, you know, when you're getting along with them, is that you're able to confide in each other, the only two on the team, right? So you're able to help each other out. And I'm going to say there's probably a little bit of that. They must have a great relationship. If they didn't, I don't think they would keep the two together all the time under those circumstances. Mm. So I'm guessing it really works well together. And he does more than just being, you know, able to play his starts for that team.
Yeah. For sure. And I really liked how you mentioned the idea of deliberate practice, right? For guys like Curtis McElhinney, where when he's going into a practice, obviously we don't know, but perhaps he's practicing in-game scenarios and he's doing things that are going to help him be prepared, opposed to just going through the motions, which, you know, even some professional players do that in practice, just go through the motions and don't deliberately practice, which leaves a lot of gains on the table, no doubt.
Yeah, from practice standpoint, I like to make sure guys are always working on something. And there's drills I get where they're not game simulated. It might be, you know, a flow drill where there's three lines of shooting coming down on you, right? So what's your focus as a goalie, right? What are you working on? Are you just letting pucks hit you in the pads and kick to the corner? Or are you just letting them hit your body and kick off? Because you're not going to play that way, right? So I want to make sure goalies always have a focus point. So maybe if it's a three line drill or there's multiple shooters coming down, you don't have time to reset or follow your rebound. Maybe you're working on just tracking the puck all the way in. Maybe you're working on rebound control, right? Maybe you're just backed off and working on your hands, right? As best you possibly can. But every drill, and I talked about with this drinker, you have to be able to get something out of. Okay. And then when you get into the drills that are more game-like and simulated, you got to play. You can't just practice and go through the motions, right? You need to be able to play your game, right? So if we're in a scenario where we're doing, let's say, a two-on-one drill or a three-on-two drill, and you allow a goal, okay? So a goal gets, you know, you don't make the save. Save that, whatever. You don't make the save, right? To me, your reset mechanism now has to come into play, even when you're in practice, right? What would you do in a game scenario to get your mind back to, you know, present tense, right? And be able to reset, right? So you have to practice those things in practice as well. You can't just show up at the game and expect that you're going to be able to pull that off, right? So do it in practice, right? So for me, I never say the phrase, and I never say this to goalies, you let in the goal. I don't say that, right? It's just not part of, because to me, if you're letting in the goal, well, you just get out of the way and here you go. Just score. And so I don't use that phrase ever, right? Okay. It's like you didn't come up with a save, right? Goalies can make, you can stop every puck, right? There's no reason why you can't stop every puck. You can. I get there's backdoor tap-ins, but you could have found a way, right? So I never say that, right? You just didn't make the save, right? So being able to make sure there's a positive spin on it all the time, right? And know that they can be invincible, or make them believe that they can try to be invincible. And then, you know, be able to stay in that moment. Use your reset mechanism of practice, because the very next shot, you have to make sure you're sharp, right? Yeah. You got to make sure you can make that save, right? And next save is expected, because they're all expected, right? And that's part of practicing your game, not just going through the motions of practice, right? So you're working on the mental side of it as much as the physical side of it within those settings. And I think that helps, again, your consistency as a player, as a goalie, that when you get in those moments in the games that, you know, you're as prepared for it as you possibly can be.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's really, really interesting. And Corey, I'm conscious of your time and I really appreciate you sharing and in depth all your perspectives and stories. And one thing I realized we neglected to talk about was KC goaltending. Would you mind telling the listeners a little bit about KC goaltending and how they can reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a trying year, to say the least, about that, because there hasn't been as much ice and opportunity to work with younger goalies. Again, it's our passion. You know, it's something I've been doing for years since I came back to the area. And it's as simple as we have development programs for all ages of goalies, whether it be the young guys all the way through to pros like a Chris Drieger, for example, who come back and spend some weeks long in the summer. So you go to the website, it's kcgoaltending.com is really what it is. All the programming is on there. There's not as much on there right now as I would like there to be, only because the times we're in. And as that moves forward, hopefully I have more programs to offer. But it's full service. It's, again, from the new guys that are learning the position from 8, 9 years old all the way through to the pros. And there's programs for everybody. Could be just goalie skating and movements. It could be week-long camps. It could be clinics that we run on a weekly basis. So there's lots of different avenues. If they have interest, that's where they can reach out to me at that point in time, and we'll see if we can set them up.
Great. Sounds good. And I'll put the link to the website in the description of the podcast for easy access, so the listeners can get to it.
Can't beat that.
Yeah. Okay, Corey, again, really appreciate your time. It's been great having you on, and wishing you nothing but the best as you return to play this upcoming season.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Taylor. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So that wraps it up for episode 57 of Mental Dive. As always, thank you everybody for your support and for tuning into the podcast. I hope that you learned as much as I did today. As well, just to remind you about the upcoming Psychology of Coaching season two, that is, of Mental Dive, releasing September 15th. Going to be 5 episodes, weekly episodes, and then there's going to be a special surprise at the end. To stay up to date with everything going on, check me out on Instagram at Taylor Staden. That's at TaylorStaden. You can also sign up for my emailing list by clicking the link in the description. Until next time, everybody, stay well. And again, I'm really looking forward to this upcoming season. Talk to you soon.